and the second half of extra time ends, and for the second season in a row at Hampden Park, Aberdeen take Celtic to penalties. Penalty kicks for the showpiece. Both Brendan Rodgers and Jimmy Tolleen are looking to get their penalty kick takers set here at Hampden Park. For the second season in a row, these two go to penalty kicks to decide the outcome of the game. Notably for Celtic, Paolo Bernardo and Arne Ingles are not on the field. It's a bit of a selection headache for the Northern Irishmen, as both have taken penalties for Celtic in the past. Well, he scored in the League Cup final against Rangers, and it is captain Callum McGregor to step up first in the Scottish Cup final. Callum McGregor puts the ball on the spot, sets himself up, and Callum McGregor misses for Celtic. And from one captain missing to the other captain now, Graham Shinney puts the ball on the spot. A cauldron of noise at Hampden Park, and Shinney has scored. Next up for Celtic is Johnny Kenny. Scores! Paul Vara steps. Scores! Number 14, Luke McCowan, next up for Celtic. Steps up and scores, slots it away. Cool conversion from Luke McCowan. Oni Daba next up for Aberdeen. Palestinian signed in January on loan until the end of the season. Daba sets himself up. Scores. Now Celtic's player of the season, Dyson Maeda, scored the winning penalty against Rangers in the League Cup final. Has to score, and does score. Celtic need to stop one of these penalties. Aberdeen on the brink. Canadian has to score, otherwise Aberdeen are your Scottish Cup winners 2025, and Celtic's domestic treble is over. Johnston sets up, takes, and misses. It's all over. Aberdeen have won the Scottish Cup for season 2024-25, and Celtic's hunt for a domestic treble is over.
Hello and welcome back to a brand new episode of Scottish Football Covered. We've got a very special episode for you today. It's a bit different to what we normally do, just reviewing the Scottish Cup final and the Premiership playoff final between Aberdeen and Celtic and Livingston and Ross County. Get in touch with us on Twitter at SF Covered, a bigger pardon, and join in on the conversation today. I'm joined by Stefan and Finlay. Stefan, how are you doing after the weekend of football that's just passed?
I'm doing good, mate. It was an absolutely banger of a weekend, almost in Scottish football. And I think in typical Scottish football fashion, we topped off in the most dramatic of ways. Aberdeen ending their Scottish Cup drought for the first time in 35 years. And we now have Livy Ball back in the Premiership. Outrageous weekend of football.
And finally, of course, same question to you, mate. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. I'm actually getting nostalgic. I know the season's only just ended last night, but it's one of those where you don't really know what to do with yourself this summer. And I think that, first of all, Scottish Cup final was, I don't want to sound too dramatic, I think it was like this shot in the arm that the domestic game needed. Just, it's a treble is fantastic, but I think the narratives needed someone else winning something and something, a kind of Aberdeen in Europe, and just something else to talk about other than how many trophies Callum McGregor has won, because he is a fantastic player. But I was baffled to find out that that was the first final he's ever lost. So that's a testament to what a career he's had and is still having. And then obviously with Livingston, I'm on the other side of Stefan here. I think I really like David Martindale and his team, so I'm excited to see what you would call politely gamesmanship in next year, and actually really interested to see the kind of players they bring in.
Yeah, so I like we are saying this, but it has been it's really well right to feel nostalgic already. I know the season has just finished, but it has been a brilliant season. I like that point you made about Aberdeen. As much as it would have been nice to see Celtic win a treble from a selfish perspective, it does give Scottish football that the other clubs that sort of impetus to take their game to the next level and create memories of their own. And we're gonna start right there at Hampden Park, the National Stadium. Stefan, you are there to take us through every step of the way. How about you tell us about the events of Saturday?
Do you know what? It was such an interesting game of football. See, to be in the stadium, to be there watching it, to be sort of talking through the action was just unbelievable, breathtaking at points. There were certain chances that both teams had to win it, especially when you went into the latter stages of the normal time. Then you went through into extra time. It really was drama filled. There was and I think you'll probably hear in the clip at this, the start of the podcast, but it was the stadium was just rumbling with noise, and you were like, whatever way this goes, it's just going to explode into like a rapturous noise, effectively. Like, it was so loud. You could feel the nerves from both sides. Going into even the end of extra time and going into penalties, you could genuinely feel the nerves around the stadium. You could see everybody's looking around. They're like, it was a great showpiece occasion. And I think when you look back at it, the way Aberdeen set up to play, they set up to stifle Celtic. They set up to just be defensive and stay, resolute, stay strong. They tried to limit them to as many chances as possible, and you have to say they did it. Mitov had an exceptional game. He had an exceptional penalty shootout, and all credit to Jimmy Tallin and Aberdeen. For me, they deserved it going into extra time, and penalties is luck. You can't say anyone deserves to win on penalties. It is ultimately down to luck, but I think when it went to extra time and Celtic were battering down that goal and they couldn't find a way to go, it just felt like it's been such a the script has been written all season. You look at Napoli winning leagues, you look at Newcastle United winning the League Cup, Crystal Palace winning the FA Cup. Like, it's just been a sort of a script altering season for a lot of clubs, and Aberdeen sort of, they wrote their own script on Saturday, and for me, they deserve that.
No, certainly has been the year of the underdog. Even Tottenham Hotspur winning their first trophy for God knows how long. Our old friend Archie will be drinking in the streets of Tottenham still. But Finlay Aberdeen, that's their first Scottish Cup win since 1990, their first trophy since 2014. Conveniently, the last time they won the Scottish Cup was also in a penalty shootout against Celtic, so they'll be anything to get Celtic in the final, they'll probably be playing for penalties in the future. But in terms of the achievement itself, how huge is this for a team like Aberdeen? And the league campaign ended a bit disappointingly, but overall, how do you rate Jimmy Tilling's first season in charge as well?
Yeah, I think overall it's a success. Like, it's a massive success. I think, first of all, I'd actually like to start by saying I'm so happy that Archie is not here to celebrate the only thing Tottenham will celebrate or have had to celebrate in years and years. So that gives me deep, deep pleasure, but I hope he's doing well either way. But on Aberdeen, it's shocking to me that, for example, St. Johnstone could win two cups in 1 year, but Aberdeen had to wait to win the Scottish Cup, as you said, 1990. It's a club that's like, it's so big, you expect so much more from them. And I get that there's the duopoly, but there have been opportunities for other clubs to kind of sneak in there. And I think on the whole, they've disappointed. That it's been a disappointing few decades for them. And there have been opportunities to kind of stake a claim for third best in the league, and they've never really, and to be fair, no one has ever really done that. And I think that's testament to the strength of the league outside of the top two. I think they really needed that. And Jimmy Tilleen's season, why I say it's a success is, despite the way the season ended and that horrible, horrible run of form, you have to remember that coming into it, he took a side that, remember this, around last year, we're coming off the back of the Neil Warnock kind of, it's a carousel of managers, and his was the kind of biggest circus, you would say, of them all. Things were not going well. Remember, the squad itself, I think, was severely underperforming and by no means brilliant. At the start of the year, you have to remember Jimmy Tilleen was dealing with a few players that are now gone, and he's made a raft of signings in January. It granted, yes, it didn't get them top four. It didn't get them that top three that they struggled to keep on to. But a Scottish Cup is a massive achievement in your first season, given how many doubters he had. And I would say that this gives him a lot, although knowing Scottish football, a lot less than it should, but enough kind of security to start building the foundations of a good side. And I'm not saying they're about to become the league's third best team. I think at the moment, the shoo-ins for that are Hibs. But as we might discuss, the dangers of Europe could change that. But yes, a fantastic achievement. And being the third best team in Scotland is maybe not the be all and end all. I think you just have to appreciate the moments that kind of winning the Scottish Cup will give you. And I think people in Aberdeen will be so pleased. And it's so rare to get to beat Celtic in a cup final that I think that's memories that will live with them forever. And if they have to wait another, 35 years to win it, at least they'll kind of have done it in style and they'll have stories to pass on. So I think, a lot of credit, whatever happens in the future.
No, I just say it's a absolute insane achievement. Not just to win the Scottish Cup, but to beat Celtic in a final. I think the last Scottish Cup final Celtic lost was to Rangers, and that would have been 2000 and the early 2000s. But anyway, I'm digressing slightly with that. Stefan finally touched on it there. This guarantees Aberdeen European football next season. They've stolen it from Hibs with the Scottish Cup final heroics. They'll go into, I think, the Europa League playoff, and obviously if they lose that, automatically drop into the Europa Conference League. Last time we seen Aberdeen in European football was in the old group stage variant of the Conference League, and even then, an underperforming Barry Robson side, they got big results, I think, against Helsinki and a historic result at home to Frankfurt, who just won the Europa League a year or two prior. How do you see Jimmy Tilleen's side performing, first of all, in Europe, and then will they be able to be perform compatibly domestically as well? Because we've saw so many good sides, Hearts this season, for example, struggle with domestic football and European football side by side.
Firstly, I want to start off by saying, well done, massive well done to Jimmy Tilleen and Aberdeen. When you look at the way their season started, and how it ended, you could probably make an argument to say, could this season be successful considering where it started but how it ended? On the face of it, no, but winning the Scottish Cup was absolutely a major success, and a major successful season for Aberdeen. In terms of them guaranteeing European football, I think with most Scottish clubs that come into Europe, it's going to be a tall order to ask them to compete Thursday, Sunday, Thursday, Sunday, Thursday, Sunday, all the way up until January. I think it's one of them where it's, you see how Aberdeen performed this season, the first half of the season with no European football and how comfortable they were. And you look at Rangers who performed this season, with European football and domestic football, and you see where they fell off. For me, it's always a hard one. You would like to think that if Jimmy Tillian can get the right players in the summer, we know he's good at clearing players out, we know he's good at bringing players in. If he can get the right players in and get Aberdeen sorted for both styles of football, you'd like to think, yeah, he could make a success of it. He seems like a real go-getter. He seems like a manager that has a bit of dynamic to him. He's not afraid to make changes. He's not afraid to alter his plan. If another manager makes changes, I'm sure we'll come on to that in a little bit. But I just think his overall ability to manage games out, it has been relatively successful for him. So could Aberdeen do it? Yes. Do I think they can? It's hard to say. It's one of those wait and see moments. History would tell you they'll probably struggle, but we'll wait and see.
I'm really excited to see them in the new sort of league phase environment in Europe. It's something Hearts should have done a lot better in this season. They had that terrible result to, I can't even remember the team. It was a team they definitely should have been beating that cost them in the last day of the group, the league phase. Like you said, I'm not too sure how they're going to fare. I don't think anyone knows. But it will be exciting. I think they'll sell out Pittodrie for the four games they get. And we've got to remember it's extra revenue as well. You're getting two more extra games than they got last time. So it's extra revenue. It's probably easier than ever before to qualify for the next phase, given the quality of some of the sides in the Conference League with the greatest respect. And look, they might get the bigger teams as well, Nottingham Forest or whoever else is qualified for that extra sort of windfall. But moving on from Jimmy Tillian and Aberdeen, we're going to go to the side they just defeated, the double winners, not the treble winners, Celtic. Finlay, I'll start with you again, Finlay. For any other side in Scotland, two trophies would be deemed a rousing success, but there's a big sense, somewhat a disappointment surrounding Celtic right now after failing to win their ninth domestic treble. Just goes to show how hard they are to win and how easy Celtic have made it kind of look recently. But where do Celtic go from here into next season? Is it panic stations to suggest they need to get rid of this player, they need to get rid of him? Or does a serious conversation need to be had about the Celtic squad and the quality, perhaps in depth?
No, it's. I don't think it's panic stations at all. I think this is a fantastic Celtic side, and people will maybe their view will be slightly dimmed by the way it ended. But you have to remember they won the league so easily. They did so well in Europe. They almost knocked out, or at least they ran Bayern Munich so close. They beat Leipzig. They recovered from that Dortmund thrashing. So they showed that they were a kind of more than capable team in the Champions League. In terms of a squad overhaul, I don't think it's get rid of everyone, just because they didn't perform in that game doesn't mean they need to leave. What I would say is Celtic are, if they are going to follow their strategy, I don't think they'll get carried away. There needs to be at least one big sale this summer. And I think the problem there is they might have to lose Maeda. I don't think that's going to happen. That's not the rumor. But I would think that they were maybe aiming to sell Kun. And Kun's second half of the season, there's maybe a worry that that slightly dimmed his value. Although you might not say by much because most people will have been watching in the Champions League and been impressed there. But they need to sell one big player because it's a model that they're based on. It's the reason that they're doing so well financially is that every summer, one big player goes out. And a couple of cheaper ones come in. I would say the concern is the way they performed against Rangers, the way they ended that season, they tailed off slightly, and the way they couldn't kind of get themselves fired up again that Scottish Cup final. It's not, it didn't look like a case of nerves or anything. It just looked like some players weren't at it. And it has been a long season, to be fair. But the 60th minute triple substitutions that usually work and help them see a closeout game just didn't pay off that time. And maybe there are questions to be asked about that as a kind of long-term strategy to win out a game, and maybe the performance of some of the substitutes. I think there were some players in there that I just wasn't particularly impressed with, and I think they need to step up next year. But yeah, it's a sum up. It's not a case of panic stations. It's more a case of little bits here and there, and to always make sure that they're progressing, because if they're not progressing, or at least showing Brendan Rodgers that they're progressing, he will leave.
What I was saying is, if you're not progressing, you're regressing. Stefan, I'll move on to you. Kind of similar. Well, feel like I touched on the point I was going to make. Me personally, I think all kind of came crashing down for Celtic at that triple substitution on the 60th minute. They just highlighted the lack of strength and depth on the Celtic bench on the particular day. I know you're missing Rio Hatate, who would be starting, and that would bring you on a better player. Phil Bernardo, I think he's very effective coming off the bench, as he's shown at stages this season. Do you think, would you agree that that's kind of where it all went, like Pete Tong for Celtic on Saturday, or is it a larger issue at play here?
No, listen, I think that is where it went wrong. The substitutions were utterly baffling when you look at it. The taking off of Arne Engels and, your £9 million striker, Adam Ida, your two most expensive players last season, you take them off and you bring on Yang and trying to think who else it was that came on. It wasn't Johnny Kenny at that stage, was it? I'm going to just quickly pull up my notes, but it was an absolutely baffling scenario when you look at it, because it was a point where Celtic were in complete control of the game. No, it was for I think it was Forrest and Yang that came on, and McCowan. It was at a time in the game where Celtic were controlling it. I think the boy that I was sitting next to, who was doing stats for another company, was saying that Celtic had about 75 to 80% possession for the majority of the game. Like, they were in total control. I feel like those substitutions alleviated that control a little bit, and it allowed Aberdeen to begin to come into the game. When you look at the squad depth that Celtic have, bringing James Forrest off the bench is great, because James Forrest is a player that can do things and can make things happen. So unfortunately, and that's two games against Aberdeen at Hampden where he's been brought on as a sub and then had to go back off. But it was a shame that he had to go off. I've tried to give Yang the benefit of the doubt. I thought earlier on in the season and last season, I thought, not for me. I don't think he's a player that offers enough. I don't think he's got a footballing brain in terms of where to run, where to pass, where to go to receive a ball. I don't see it. Then he grabs a couple of goals this season. You're thinking, okay, maybe he's come on, he's bulked up a little bit, looking a little bit physical. You look in the big games, he's not done it. And at Celtic, you have to do it. So for me, Rodgers sees something in him. I'm unsure what it is, but for me, Yang's not good enough. I'm going to be really controversial here. Luke McCowan, I don't think he's done enough for me at Celtic. £1 million comes in from Dundee, Dundee captain. I have to say, I think he's a Dundee player in a Celtic shirt. Ultimately, he's not done enough to convince me. Adam Ida, £9 million. Okay, scored 20 goals plus this season for Celtic. A £9 million striker should probably be scoring you a lot more than that. Again, trying not to be hypercritical, but I just don't think he's lived up to his price tag. So for me, people will argue Arne Engels hasn't lived up to his price tag, but when a player's quite young, 21, coming into a new league, a more physically demanding league, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. But I just think Celtic have got an opportunity this summer to weed out the dead wood, and bring in a little bit of a freshness. I'll cut that out. The selling of Kyogo in January, I think, set Celtic back. They need a striker. They need a backup left back. They need a backup right back. They'll probably need another centre half. Liam Scales isn't good enough. I every time he had the ball on Saturday, every time the ball was passed him, he took a touch. The ball rolled over the top of his foot. He was chasing ghosts for me the whole game. I'm trying not to be really critical, but I just thought a lot of Celtic's big players let them down.
A damning indictment from this of the Celtic squad from Stefan. I agree with you on some points. I think I disagree that with Luke McCown. I think he's been good at his role at the media, though he has underperformed. I know 20 goals, but his overall level performance I don't think has been great. I don't trust Brendan Rodgers' recruitment really to get it right if he does want to replace his players for next season. I think even in his first spell, apart from that first season when he got Moussa Dembélé and Scott Sinclair, I don't really think much of his signings were great. And then he continues to play Liam Scales week in, week out when they spent, what, £13 million on other centre halves to partner Carter Vickers, and yet still plays probably the worst performing one of them. I dare to say. I don't like coming on here and being too critical of players, but
No, but I mean it's factual. When you look at Liam Scales, I don't think there's a worse. I would play Stephen Welsh ahead of the guy, and he's out on loan at Mechelen. I don't want to go on a hate fest here, but I was speaking about Yang not having a footballing brain. I don't think Liam Scales has a footballing brain. He's a Glenn Leuvens-esque player.
I liked him when he came in when he was as a squad player, but I don't want to centre this conversation around what Celtic can do better when the focus of the conversation should be about how grand an achievement it is from Aberdeen. Having said that, my next point is about Celtic's results and performances in big games this season. We spoke about the great performance against Bayern Munich, but pretty much ever since then. And then a big game, they've underperformed. The games against Rangers, terrible performance at home. Cup final, it wasn't a vintage performance by any means. Even at Ibrox twice this season, really not been great at all. Finlay, I made a point, I don't know what episode it would have been, I made a point in one of them. We talk about Rangers underperforming when the pressure's on. Is there an argument to be had that Celtic underperform when the pressure's off? And I know that there should be pressure on you in the cup final, but the sort of narrative was there was an inevitability of Celtic were going to go in and sweep up this treble. Is there any argument to be had or any question to be had of the Celtic team's commitment, maybe, for lack of a better word?
A commitment, I don't know, because remember they still sought out the title, and the kind of tougher results came once the kind of league was effectively theirs. But I think what I noticed was during the Aberdeen game, where normally you would see Celtic, sorry, playing quick one-touch football, there was that kind of languid two, three, even sometimes just four touches on the ball before moving it. And so when Aberdeen sat deep and were compact and congested the middle, you know the best way to kind of break that apart is moving the ball around quickly, get them out of position. But the way they played and just the intensity was low enough that Aberdeen could sit comfortably. And I know Celtic took the lead, but they kind of played in a weird way into Aberdeen's hands there. And now the reason why you mentioned it's a kind of a passion thing. Could they kind of fire themselves up for a Scottish Cup final? I trust most players to be able to do that. They're professionals, they play at Celtic. The reason they got there and the reason they've done so well is because as players, they know how to get themselves going for the big games, and the Scottish Cup is a big game. They would have known that. There maybe also is an element of just running out of steam. There's a possibility that having kind of won the league so early, having been knocked out of the Champions League, which was devastating for them because they got so close, because they really thought they were this close to taking out Bayern Munich. Bayern Munich, multiple Champions League winners, German champions. And so maybe by the end of the season, the players didn't have all that much to give. And I don't know. I wouldn't say it's a passion thing. I'm sure they would have wanted to win the Scottish Cup as much as the fans would have wanted them to. I think maybe they were a bit knackered, and then they just, on the day, they just couldn't think on the pitch. They just couldn't organize themselves in a way to break Aberdeen down, because I know Brendan Rodgers will have probably told them and explained to them how to do it. They just couldn't get that movement quick enough. And a lot of credit goes to Aberdeen for kind of, even though they conceded, I really thought that that opening goal would potentially open a floodgate or give them a reason to give up. They absolutely did not. And they did so well to get back into that game, even though it was a Kasper Schmeichel own goal that was behind it. But Aberdeen's substitutions, conversely, were brilliant. And Jimmy Tillin again should get so much credit for that.
Yeah, no, listen, I totally agree with that. We speak about substitutions changing the game. Jimmy Tillin got his substitutions spot on. He brought on serial sub Shaden Morris. He puts the ball in. Kasper Schmeichel, what great keeper, elite keeper. You know that way where you don't want to say it's his fault. It is his fault. He's had a shocker, but it's one of them, considering the career he's had and even the career for Celtic he's had. You can't really complain too much. Like, he's not really made a mistake on the biggest occasion. It's typical that it does happen, but Aberdeen get their goal because their substitutions affected the game. Celtic's didn't. And massive credit to Jimmy Tillin for that, because his Aberdeen side, as Finlay was speaking about, could have crumbled after the first goal. And maybe they would have had Celtic applied pressure. But the way Aberdeen set out to play and the way Celtic set up to play against that, it worked so much in Aberdeen's favour that they were able to sit in comfortably and then hit on the break. And they were unlucky not to win the game when you consider the chances that they had, but equally, you look at the chance Daizen Maeda had at the end of the game.
I'm just looking back at the match there as well. Brendan Rodgers had an extra sub to make an extra time and refused to make it. Maybe that's just probably telling of the state, the sort of bones, bare bones of the squad he was left with to put on the bench. But I'm digressing. That kind of wraps up anyway our coverage of the Scottish Cup final. Again, if I haven't said that already, huge congratulations to Aberdeen. It's a fantastic achievement, and we all know how much that means to the people of the Granite City. That's not all football, though, that we had over the course of the week. They had the second leg of the Scottish Premiership playoff. We didn't have a correspondent at that game, unfortunately for you, but we can just recap it quickly just now. Livingston win promotion back to the Scottish Premiership after a fantastic turnaround in the second leg. First leg in the 1-1. This leg ended 4-2 to Livingston. Joshua Nisbet and Ronan Hale gave County control of the tie until. I'll cut that bit. Joshua Nisbet and Ronan Hale gave County control of the tie until goals from Lewis Smith, Danny Wilson again. That's his third goal just in the playoffs alone, before a fantastic strike from Robbie Muirhead and Tete Yenge then sealed the deal in added time. Finlay, I'll start with you. Ross County's playoff luck, it finally runs out. That's the third season in a row they've ended up in the playoffs. The only word we can use to describe this is catastrophic, considering the position they were in the league. That's they've not won a game since the 1st of March. They only have themselves to blame, don't they?
Absolutely. And this is something we talked about before coming on. It was they've had ample time to get themselves out of that situation. Dundee were in free fall. They only needed one result, I think, to go differently, and they would have been safe and they would have avoided this mess. But they just could. I think it was 11 games without a win, which is a shocking number given that they looked so promising when we thought they'd sorted a lot of their issues out. It is their fault. Their luck has run out. That doesn't mean Don Cowie's not a good manager per se. I still think Ross County will be back within a year or two. I think now that Livingston and Falkirk have gone up, that championship is a fair bit weaker than it would have been otherwise. So I give them a very good chance of actually winning the league next year, but they shouldn't be there. And to be honest, at 2-0 up, they should have seen that game out, and they just couldn't. And as soon as it went to 2-1, I think people could tell it was going to go Livingston's way. David Martindale certainly knew it was, or at least that's what he said. So yeah, this is very much their own doing, and I'd be curious to see what happens to Don Cowley after it.
Stefan Finlay kind of touched on the point there. He thinks Ross kind of will bounce back up. It's almost like the inverse of that tie they had against Partick Thistle, albeit not as dramatic, where they came back like 20 minutes ago. But this time it was Ross County in the comfortable position and just absolutely collapsed. Do you see the Staggies bouncing straight back up? And that's a sort of two questions for the price of one. I'm going to ask you again. Do you see them doing it without Ronan Hale? Because I think it will be largely expected that he's going to leave this summer at one of the bigger teams in the Premiership.
I think Ross County should bounce straight back up. You consider Ron McGregor and the finances that have Ross County, that Ross County have rather. I would expect them to back up that are to come back up next season, no doubt whatsoever. We touched on the fact that they've not really won a game since the 1st of March. Incredible decline. They only have themselves to blame. Last night was a disaster for them, because they shouldn't have been in the position that they're in now to go down, being 2-0 up and being comfortably ahead shouldn't have happened. It's a massive, massive letdown for the people of Dingwall. Don Cowie, I think is a decent coach, and I think he should be given the chance to bring Ross County back up, because I think he will do it. Will he do it with Ronan Hale? No, because I think Ronan Hale will go to a team like Hearts. He should certainly be going to a team like Hearts or Hibs, because his goal contributions have been massive for Ross County, and it's just a shame that he never had anyone there to sort of help him along the way and get more goals for Ross County, because maybe then they wouldn't be where they are. But I will think if Don Cowie is to come back up with, or if Ross County are to come back up under Don Cowie, they are going to have to do it without Ronan Hale, because, as I say, he's a man in demand.
Definitely see Ronan Hale playing for one of the sides in European qualifiers this season, even maybe Dundee United. I know they've probably not going to get Sam Dalby, and I know they're completely different strikers, but look, if maybe it's an avenue that Jim Goodwin wants to go down. And I'm gonna say, before I move on to talk about Livingston, what I think the travelling fans in the Scottish Championship have absolutely want to watch. They've got rid of Livingston in Falkirk away days, and they've been replaced by, what is it, and Hamilton, and they've been replaced by Arbroath and Ross County. So it's absolutely fantastic for news for travelling fans in the Scottish Championship. Finlay, I will go back to you, because you've interviewed David Martindale in the past and got to know him just through your work. It's an amazing achievement for your pal, we'll say. Do you think they're strong enough to survive next season and kind of become that club that they were, that we've kind of got to know over the last 6 or 7 years? Is, I don't want to say an established Premiership club, but they were at one point pretty established and pretty secure.
Well, yeah, it's a, I think a first of all fantastic result for Livingston and Davey. Sorry, Davey, as I call him, because I know him so well. Yeah, they've first of all, he, I don't think people understand the work that he puts in at that club. Like that interview that he was speaking about, we had it in the gym, and that was a gym that he built. So he'll take you on a tour of the stadium, and he can just point out all the things that were his design, that he built, that he was in, he was actually involved in the physical kind of making of. He's so invested in that club, and he always says, you know, if an offer comes in, I'll, or if the club want me to leave, I'll happily walk away. But I just don't believe it. Not because there's the element of Scottish clubs looking down on him, which I think is totally unfair, because if you compare his record to some of the records in the Scottish Premiership, it is a total mystery, or it's not a mystery really, why he hasn't got a job in the top flight. But his, if we're talking about an industry that needs to promote up the leagues more or reward good managers more, then he should be up there. Like he should have been up there a long time ago, but he is unfortunately tarred and feathered with his reputation, and he might be stuck at Livingston for the rest of his career. But he is doing a really great job, because the turmoil at that club, It's incredible. There are people, the ownership is so confusing that I don't think anyone understood what was going on for a time. There were people who were coming to the club and saying, "Yeah, I actually have shares in this club. Can I have my money?" And they had no idea because it'd been so badly run that they just had to give them money because even the courts were saying, "Well, we're not really sure, but it could be that you owe him money." So they were just dishing out funds. So he was working with a bare bones squad in a stadium that we talked about before is always empty. There's the artificial surface, which he loves, but I think is getting redone. So in a way, it was a little bit of a basket case of a club. But if he has done so well to kind of keep it afloat, and if you think about, for example, the coaches that have come through, Marvin Bartley was a coach there, Dougie Imrie was a coach there, to name a few. He just gets people in, he trains them up that you'll see in the game later on. You know, I've known maybe Ryan McGowan and Danny Wilson will become coaches one day, and they'll have learned a lot from him. And Danny Wilson, by the way, quick side note, we talk about big game players. That is, it's been scintillating playoffs from him, and I would love to see him in the Scottish Premiership next season. But yes, David Martindale deserves so much credit for the work that he's doing. And actually, the kind of Martindale hoofball is on its way out. And if people have been paying attention, you'll see that players like Tait are sitting deeper and trying to help defenders play the ball out. And he's got that with his centre backs. They are trying to be more progressive, not for the sake of being more progressive, but that's because that's what it took to win. And we might see a mixed approach. And that is the thing. He's going to have tactical variability, which not a lot of managers have. And I think, for example, that was the downfall of Tony Docherty, was all one note. It was gung ho and it didn't really work. And he lost his job. David Martindale can play different ways. And with a little bit of money from a new investment coming in, we could see actually a slow building of a strong Livingston side. For as long as they can keep their star player, David Martindale, they could be on their way to becoming a team that sits maybe just outside the top six or even breaks in every so often.
Yeah, they're no strangers to the top six. We've seen them get there. I don't know if it's once or twice under David Martindale. I know he's not everybody's cup of tea, but he's a guy who deserves a lot of credit for the way he approaches his craft 100%. I just hope that if he is to leave Livingston in the future, these previous antics, shall we say, don't hold him particularly back because I think he has proved completely he's a rehabilitated guy. You did touch on the Astros part though, Finlay, and I'm going to stick with you just now, unless Stefan has anything to say
No, I was
quickly.
just going to quickly say, I don't think anyone can doubt the commitment that David Martindale has to Livingston. I'm probably one of Livingston's biggest critics because I didn't like the style of football that they would play. You understand why they played it, but it was just horrendous to watch. We always talk about the Livy low block. It was just horrendous watching for a game of football. If he has become a lot more pragmatic and more progressive in his style of play, then fair enough. You can see the impact that he's had at Livi as a club, and you don't perform consistently in the top flight if you're not a good coach. And I think that's something I just wanted to quickly touch on is the Scottish managerial merry-go-round that we seem to go on. You see, David Martindale is not a part of that. He never, anytime he's linked for a job, he always stays at Livy, whereas other coaches will leave one club and then go around on that merry-go-round and fall off at another club. It's something you don't see from David Martindale, and I think it does probably show off how much he loves Livingston. So for that, a lot of respect for it. So it'll be interesting to see how they perform in the Premiership, and obviously with that horrific plastic park.
Yeah, no, that segues me on nicely to my next point. There is now going to be three AstroTurf parks in the Scottish Premiership next season. Obviously, I think Rugby Park's one, the Falkirk Stadium's the other, and now I think Livingston. I was about to say the Tony Mac, but it's actually called the Home of the Setfair Arena, which is an even worse name somehow. But Finlay, I'm going to start with you. Me and you were at Partick Thistle versus Livingston at Fir Hill, and I would say that pitch was probably worse than the Astro Park that they played the second leg on. I just want to know what's your general feeling on AstroTurf surfaces in the top flight. because we just, as I just the example I documented there, this was an example where the grass part was probably worse.
Yes, I have mixed feelings about it. I'm open to kind of suggestions and talking points when it comes to Astro, because I think when it comes to the winter, the worst thing is games that are frozen off or called off because of rain. And I don't think you get that problem with Astro. That being said, I think there is a limit, and the old spaghetti had has the kind of I think the problem is it's so viscerally, it's just ugly. And when you watch it on TV, it's so shiny and it looks so fake. And I don't think that's a good look. So when the sky come around, I think it's for the purist, it's a case of who cares. But actually, it does matter that when the big TV cameras come around, the pitch and the stadium look presentable and the kind of stands look a bit full. Because again, you can't escape it. Scottish football needs to sell itself as a product. And so, Astro, yes, I understand. If you don't have the means to look after grass pitch, I think it should be okay to kind of have the Astro. It just needs to look a little bit better. And then it's a question for the players. I think some players don't actually like it. And I don't actually think the research is conclusive on the impact it has on injuries. So I'm open to suggestions, but like I said, it needs to be at least looking a little bit better than it does. They need to make it look a bit more presentable.
No, I completely agree. I think if you asked me, even as little as 2 years ago, I'd have been vehemently against it. Like, I despised astroturf pitches. I probably became a bit more open-minded to the idea. I know the financial savings it makes teams at Livingston, for example. And I think even I never had. I know it's different when me using my playing career as an example, but I played in astroturf parks all the time. Never did I know up to when I was about like 15 or 16. I never known them to get an injury because of the astroturf surface. And I know this is a completely different example from a professional player playing on grass every day of their life and then playing one game in astroturf and getting an injury. I know that can happen. But the only thing I think it would probably prevent is if you're a bit scared like me making a slide tackle and not want to get astro burned, as we called it. But Stefan, I'll just pose the same question to you. If you get a general opinion on AstroTurf Parks, I think the SFA, as it stands, are still standing with this ban on it for the start of next season, which I'm not against. I think that's completely fair. I don't think it looks good on TV, but I just wanted to know if you had any different opinions from what's been said.
I think the ban's been extended to the following season. So for the next year or so, we're going to have to suffer with the plastic parks. I mean, I've always been quite open on this subject, and I've always been quite against plastic parks. I think when you're trying to sell Scottish football as a product and you're trying to sell it as a game that people should come in and watch because it's great quality of football, it's got a raw and passionate support. I don't think you can sell it if you've got your top teams playing on a stupid looking plastic park. It gives off amateur vibes. I know that some countries have to have teams playing on plastic parks for weather because without it, they wouldn't be able to get their season underway. They wouldn't be able to play it through. We don't have that. We live in Scotland where rain and wind are common, but we're able to help keep our stadiums. My argument is if you play in the top flight, you should have a grass park, and if you can't afford it, then questions have to be asked if you should be playing top flight football because it's a professional game, and for me, it just looks like amateur hour. I don't like it. I don't like the prospect of players being injured on it. I don't like the look of it. And it just gives off such, and it's funny that it just gives off such an unauthentic feel. I understand why teams do have it, but I think the sooner the SFA impose this ban on it, the better.
No, it doesn't even surprise me that they've extended the ban because even when they get introduced, I had this feeling that they're going to reap their way out of it somewhat. This sort of new regime of the SFA, because you go back as far 20 years ago, they used to, I think it was Falkirk, won the championship like twice, and got denied entry twice because their stadium wasn't big enough or something. So it's gonna see that change. They've not really got that spine to.
It's become more laxed.
Yes.
It's like it's, you know, I don't understand it. I just think we have to have standards. You know, imagine Celtic decided, okay, well, do you know what? We'll rip out our hybrid pitch and we'll put down a plastic park at Celtic Park. It just would not look great. And I understand why Livi as a club need to do it because it's more financially and economically viable for them. But, you know, you're a professional club. If you can't afford it, then questions need to be asked.
Yeah, another thing, if I jump in, is how long have we been playing on grass pitches? It's been over 100 years. If we've not figured out how to avoid the frost and irrigation by now, then I think the kind of groundskeepers union need to maybe start having a look at themselves.
Strong words for groundskeepers across
Yeah,
Scotland.
that's the hill I'm dying on.
That's
No, I mean, I'm with you on that. I hate when you hear, oh, a pitch has been waterlogged. Well, why? put more holes in it.
Yeah, have a better drainage system. It bugs me. And it's the worst thing about Scottish football in the winter is how many games are going to be postponed because of it. And it's already a grueling schedule, and then you have to move stuff around to fit things in. And yeah, listen, we could have a whole pitch debate on this podcast for forever. But no, for me, the sooner they're out, the better. And that's the plastic parks, by the way, not any club in particular. Although it'll be interesting to see where Livi finish.
Well, I don't know when you guys are going to hear our predictions for the next season. Probably closer to the time, I imagine. But with a heavy heart, that rounds up today's episode of Scottish Football Covered. I've been Mac, joined by Stefan and Finlay. We'll be back with you next season. I'm not going to say the time, but we'll be on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcast from. But if you want to hear, want to get your Scottish football covered fix over the summer, then please, please, please don't forget to join in on the conversation on Twitter at SFCovered and enjoy your summer from myself, Stefan, and Finlay. I hope we've had a lovely time presenting these podcast episodes to you over the season. Be sure to join us next season. Thank you for listening and goodbye.